Well, yeah, that is advantageous to get a generator that's already installed, just needs some maintenance. But I have always been opposed to having the diesel generator there. And I always wonder, if you're going to put a generator, to have a propane generator.
And, yeah, we talked about that too. The
diesel being a being an issue, but yeah, definitely if can.
So if you're going to leave it there, then you've got to move that smokestack above the height of the roof, because our air conditioning system pulls in that exhaust, and it's really hard to work in this building when you're getting diesel fumes in here.
I imagine so.
Yeah.
I will mention that to Mr. Mooney in the morning.
And very good. Thank you.
Certainly address that. Don't want anybody in here.
Well, we got CK Market to raise it up a little higher because it was just shooting straight out.
Wow.
But I said, no, you got to go above the roof. And we've never been able to convince them of that.
Okay. Yeah,
so
that shouldn't
be. Now they're gone, so.
Yeah, we'll get it above the roof. That shouldn't take too much effort.
Okay. So I imagine there's going to be some more planning and discussion about what are the goods that are going to be sold in the store.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Hopefully majority of the products that will be sold in the store will be local. You know, we've got a number of, again, we've talked about it before, a number of local farmers who are here, certainly have Warrior Institute and others that are currently in the market. A lot of their produce and different things. Also have a local egg farmer, Fillmore Harvey. He's got Harvey Farms. It's got fresh eggs, fresh local eggs that are also potentially able to be sold. So we're actually exploring the potential for offering his eggs out of the mini mart in the real short term. So yeah, those are things that definitely need to take place. That's why if you're bringing in a Tops or those others, you know, you have you can always work into any type of lease agreement. You know, these are the things that we'd like to see, and here's what it is we'd like you to do. Certainly that all comes down to negotiation, but for them, it's the bottom line really is what they're worried about. Obviously it's, you know, C&K, we've learned a kind of a tough lesson on that one, but if it's something that the tribe is doing, you know, we have obviously an opportunity to design something that best suits our community and the needs of the folks who live here.
Right. Yeah, I can see that potential. And just it's an organizing and task to you know, find out, well, what would people purchase, and how much of it would they purchase? You know, how many fruits and vegetables can this community consume and purchase?
Sure.
And there's food security issues that go beyond fruits and vegetables and meats and grains and things. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're here now. We're living the issues surrounding food security today, and it's not something that's very comfortable for a lot of people. And
it's hard.
I mean, you go even further than that. Even if you had every grocery store and everything that folks needed, doesn't necessarily mean you have food security at that point. You know, it goes a lot further than that. It goes, you know, into economics and a lot of other things. So,
correct.
Certainly have to address the entire gamut.
Yeah. Okay. So we're talking with Hoopoe Valley Tribal Council Chairman Ryan Jackson, and he's given us the chairman update for October 2016. So some other topics you wanted to talk about was the Chief of Police.
Chief of Police, yeah. We're happy to announce that Mr. Delbert Gray has accepted the position of Chief of Police. It's been a real arduous search for the right candidate along the way. We felt like, or I certainly felt like, there was a number of candidates who could and would be willing to come in and take over the position. Unfortunately, for reasons outside of my control, those candidates ultimately decided that, you know, it wasn't in their interest to take the position. It was unfortunate. Delbert, well, Mr. Gray, Chief Gray, decided that he was ultimately and is ultimately interested in taking the position. We are in the process of getting him hired, and the goal is to have him on duty. I guess it would be November 7th, Monday the 7th. I believe that's the date we're shooting for. He brings a tremendous amount of experience, 33 plus years in law enforcement. He started his career here with the Hoopa Tribal Police, Tribal Security, ultimately at that time in the early 80s. He was one of the first cross-deputized officers that we had. He spent a couple of years here. Ultimately, you know, it's interesting that, you know, we, you know, over the last few years, last year certainly as that I've been the chair, have had a number of discussions with the county sheriff about the MOU and uniforms and vehicles and all of those things and gear and what have you. And the tribe, you know, said, hey, wait a minute, we're Sovereign. We're going to use our own uniforms. We're going to have our own tribal insignia on those. We're going to use our own vehicles. We're not going to, you know, have tribal officers driving around in county sheriff vehicles. And what Delbert said was, shoot, when he first started, they were wearing sheriff uniforms and they were driving the sheriff squad cars. So that's kind of an interesting bit of information and history that he was able to share. But after he left here, he went to California Highway Patrol, spent a considerable amount of time in, I believe it was Needles, California, down there in Southern California. He recently transferred up to Crescent City. He worked as a sergeant there for a number of years and ultimately retired, you know, with honors. So I'm grateful. I'm excited to have him. You know, it's he's a tribal member. He's got a tremendous amount of, again, experience, and he's looking forward to hitting the ground running. I know we've gone through a tremendous amount of change there, and certainly when I came to office, you know, my commitment was to rebuild the program, to get the MOU back in place, to pursue additional jurisdictions for our officers in order to keep the community safe. We have a total now with Delbert, 8 officers. When I came on board, we had 1 officer at the time, so we didn't have an MOU. We've been able to get an MOU put together with the county sheriff. We've also negotiated a deputization agreement with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. We've got 1 officer currently in the academy, Mr. Russell Hurley. He's from what I understand, I have 32 recruits out there in the academy now. He's in the top 5, so we are really excited to have Russell out here as an officer. We've been able to get. We have 2 of our officers now that are cross deputized. It's Interim Chief Norton, our new officer Hawk Lane. He's a deputized county sheriff. We also have Officer Blake Hostler and Officer Yanez, who are now currently deputized but are still going through field training. We are also in the process of getting those same officers, Yanez, Lane, Hostler, as well as Buckman and Officer Billy, deputized through the Bureau of Indian Affairs. That process is also moving along. As soon as, Officer Norton will also be deputized through the Bureau of Indian Affairs. So we're continuing to grow. Bringing on Chief Gray is a real coup for the tribe. This position is going to require a lot of work, a lot of dedication, a real commitment to addressing a lot of the issues that are present here in the valley. One of those issues, obviously, is downtown and the situation downtown. We've put a lot of pressure on the county and the sheriff to address some of those issues as far as some of the loitering and other things that's happening down there. I have a meeting, like I said, on the coast tomorrow well, part of it's related to water, but also maybe Under Sheriff Billy Hansel to continue to have discussions about, you know, the county sheriff's presence out here and the things that we expect them to do, that is their obligation. So that hopefully will go well. Another thing that we're exploring and as part of the overall tribal budget that I submitted is the purchasing of a jail facility here in Hoopa, to be able to address some of the issues that it seems the county's not really interested in addressing. You know, it's, I mean, folks are don't like to see what's happening downtown, nor do I. We sort of are at the whim of the county sheriff, whether or not he wants to come out here or send his guys out here to make that a priority, because he, at this point, has yet to make it a priority. You know, myself and members of the tribal council feel like, okay, you know, we are a sovereign nation. We need to take actions that are in our interest, and we feel like you know, the construction or purchasing of a mobile jail facility is something that we think will help to address a lot of the issues that we have here. You know, in conjunction with the establishment of a tribal jail is also the establishment of tribal criminal laws, where you can essentially be arrested under a tribal crime for loitering or drunk in public, or, you know, some of the other things that we see happening that are real minor offenses, but that aren't really being addressed by the county sheriff and saying, okay, you know, this type of activity isn't allowed here. You know, if the county sheriff's not interested in doing something about it, then we're in a position now where we will. And we're also expecting that Department of Justice and Office of Justice Services and Bureau of Indian Affairs also are partners in that, and assuming federal criminal jurisdiction out here as well, in order to again begin to fill the gaps that have been created as a result of essentially Public Law 280 and the state's responsibility under Public Law 280 to provide criminal oversight out here, have criminal jurisdiction on Indian reservations in California. There are a tremendous amount of gaps that just aren't being filled. And again, like I said, we're at the whim of a county sheriff, and whether or not he feels it's important enough for him to provide a certain level of law enforcement out here. So for us, that's not enough. You know, we need to do more. We need to take the actions necessary to keep the community safe. So that's what we're doing. And again, we're excited to have Chief Gray out here. We'll have a swearing in for him on November 7th, and we'll get the process moving for him and start to, you know, turn the reins over to him to build the program into you know, vision of the tribe, vision of the council, and the vision of Officer Gray.
Well, I kind of excited about having Officer Gray come back to the community, and I remember when he first started, and, well, when we started in the our tribal part of the tribal police, but, yeah, I thought he was doing okay there. But this whole concept of a portable facility of a jail, that's mm-hmm. kind of a how did that discussion come about, and who was involved in that discussion?
Well, that discussion, a lot of these discussions related to law enforcement and trying to expand upon, you know, Public Law 280 came as a result of the sheriff initially pulling the deputization agreement. Well, in the agreement, it's when a new sheriff is elected, the deputization agreement goes away. And we're required, counties required, the tribes required to negotiate a new agreement. And at that time, it was 2011, 2012, Sheriff Downey was elected. Former Chairman Mastin, Leonard Mastin at the time, he was the chairman, and we entered into the negotiation, and Sheriff Downey even then was being a real, you know, a real, I'm not going to say it over the air, but he was being really tough to deal with, and was unwilling to compromise on a lot of you know, the issues that needed to be resolved. And as a result of that, we started to explore other options. That's where the deputization agreement with the Bureau of Indian Affairs came in, the SLEC, Special Law Enforcement Commission, deputization agreement. Started pursuing that. We also were utilizing the provisions in the new Tribal Law and Order Act, Section 221, which allowed for tribes in public law 280 states to request federal concurrent jurisdiction. So all of the things were coming to the forefront as a result of not being able to compel Sheriff Downey to enter into a deputization agreement with the tribe at the time for law enforcement services or have our officers deputized. We ultimately were able to negotiate an agreement after about 5 months of not having an agreement. And some of the other issues that we were looking at the time sort of fell by the wayside. And we leadership then felt comfortable with the deputization agreement, and that was all that we needed, and there wasn't as much fire under some of the other issues. And as we went through administration change into former Chairwoman Mastin, things began to unravel as well then, when related to the sheriff and our interactions with the sheriff, and ultimately led to Sheriff Downey pulling the deputization agreement and threatening that this wasn't something that he was interested in doing. And for us, as a tribe and as a tribal council, we said, look, we can't go without law enforcement services out here. We can't just continue. We see the amount of crime, you know, we see the amount of activity that's out here that needs some type of enforcement. And the sheriff, you know, you out there in the community, ask if they feel comfortable with the amount of officers that the county sheriff provides or Humboldt County Sheriff's provides. They'll say, no, it's not adequate. Well, if that is in fact the case, and I believe that as the tribal chairman, I believe that as a tribal council member as well, you know, there are other options that we have to explore. If the county's not willing to do these types of things that they're supposed to do, then we have to take it upon ourselves to figure that out, as we always have as a tribe. And we're, again, back pursuing the reassumption. We're now, that's been a real tough road that we've been hoeing as well. But we're almost there. We're as far as the review that needs to take place at the different levels of Department of Justice, we're right under Attorney General Yates, who ultimately make a decision on our application for reassumption. We continue to put pressure on them. We feel like we'll have a positive determination by Thanksgiving from the Department of Justice on federal reassumption and concurrent jurisdiction out here. So that's another avenue that we explored. We were able to get the deputization agreement with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And in that came the discussion amongst the tribal council, amongst the self-governance office. How do we ultimately, you know, address all of the other issues related to law enforcement that the county sheriff and the sheriffs that are out here in Hoopa don't want to address? And you talk about response time. That's one thing that a lot of folks here in Hoopa, myself included, are not happy with. If you only have one officer that's on for Eastern Humboldt County and he's out in McKinleyville, that's a long time to wait for an officer when your life is potentially in danger. And so in order for our guys who are tribal police officers to be able to respond to those calls in a timely manner, we feel like they need some level of criminal jurisdiction, because as a tribal police officer, the authority that we have is civil in a lot of ways. And we certainly can go to a scene and make citizens arrests and do those types of things. And we will, and we have, but that doesn't really give us, in my opinion, doesn't really give us a whole heck of a lot without a deputization agreement, without an officer who's actually cross-deputized as state peace officer authority, an officer who's federally deputized as federal criminal authority, or an officer who, in this case, by the passing of tribal criminal laws, would have the ultimate jurisdiction, which is tribal jurisdiction, to be able to respond to calls of criminal nature and be able to make an arrest citing tribal criminal law.
Well, what would those contain? What are you specifically looking at then?
We're looking at Chapter 11 of the it's in my binder here. It would be the laws that the Bureau of Indian Affairs upholds and cites on Indian reservations around the country that don't have Public Law 280. It's Title 11. I can't think of the exact CFR.
Kind of,
it's anything of, like misdemeanors to felonies to infractions. At that point, it's simple assaults. It's you name it. Every crime essentially that could be cited would be cited and can be cited. Now again, it gets into where is that what the focus is going to be? And then it gets back down to the whole discussion around the jail. Okay, if we have, say we didn't go with Chapter 11, the federal standard that the BIA has for, Lame Deer, Montana, or Tohono O'odham in Arizona, or wherever else around Indian country. And we said, we're going to adopt essentially the California Penal Code. Same exact criminal code as what California has, can all be cited through a tribal criminal court. It's the same thing with the dog ordinance that we have. If you have a stray dog that's out there, you go to get the dog. Well, we don't have a dog pound. We don't have anywhere to put the stray dog. So what do? Well, you either don't enforce the same thing with like open range and closed range and cattle and everything else running around. We can take them to the rodeo grounds. That's something that we've done in the past. But ultimately, we don't have the infrastructure and we don't have the facilities necessary to do those types of things. And it's the same with a criminal code where we make an arrest for a specific crime, whatever that crime might be. We don't have the infrastructure. We don't have the facility. And this is the pressure that we continue to put on the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Department of Justice is to say, look, I was at a meeting in Washington about a month ago, and it was the head cop, Darren Cruzan, from the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Department of Interior Secretary Sally Jewell is there, and Larry Roberts and, federal officials and Tracy Tolu, Austin Justice Service, and said, look, we can't accept anymore that you recognize that there are deficiencies in Public Law 280 states related to law enforcement. You have to do something about that. You have the Tribal Law and Order Act that requires the federal government reassume concurrent jurisdiction on an Indian reservation, but that only goes so far. You have essentially abandoned, or the federal government has abandoned, their responsibility to provide law enforcement services to the five states and Indian tribes in five states, California, Oregon, Washington, Alaska, and Minnesota, since 1955. You have had no presence here on our reservations to help us to provide this type of infrastructure, this type of support for almost a half a century. And now we're coming to the table and saying, look, what are you doing? You can't just continue to tell us, well, yeah, we understand that there's problems out there and we're doing the best we can. What the Bureau of Indian Affairs has done as far as law enforcement is concerned out here in California is created a position, the Pacific Regional Office, of a special agent in charge. And I forget the gal's name, but anyway, that they have one officer for... Her name is Carlene Fisher, actually, for the entire state of California, all the tribes in Indian country. Aside from that, They don't offer much. They can't respond. They can't dispatch officers. They can't do any of these things like what you'd see in a Montana or in a South Dakota or in North Dakota or, you know, all the other Arizona and Wyoming. They have officers that are actually out there. So we've been putting pressure on saying, look, you have to help us develop the courts. You have to help us develop the infrastructure, the jails, all those different things in order for us to be able to adequately address the problems here on our reservation. And there are a lot of them. So that's where the discussion came in the budget that I proposed. I proposed the purchasing of a mobile unit. It would have 10 cells. It would be something that would be manufactured off the reservation and then transported in. The location that we've sort of tentatively identified is behind the actual jail, or maybe actually behind the actual tribal police department. I think that's where there's kind of an old office building or something back there. We would take that out. We'd install the jail facility there. Now, ultimately, you know, we're not going to be in the business of holding folks in a jail for any real length of time. If somebody has committed a, you know, real serious felony, what we envision is that our officers can immediately respond, can detain somebody, whether they're deputized through the state or the federal government, whatever it is, they're tribal officers. Respond, take them into custody, take them back to the jail facility, detain them, and determine whether or not it's ultimately a tribal crime that we want to cite them with, if it's a state crime, ultimately we want to cite them with, or if it's a federal crime. And in the case of anything other than a tribal crime, we would contact the county sheriff, say, hey, we have an individual here who's committed a crime that violates state law. It's your responsibility to come out and make the arrest and cite them through the county jail and go from there. On the federal side of things, it's, you know, we'd have to, that's yet to be determined because we don't have federal jurisdiction out here. I guess ultimately the FBI and other folks, obviously ATF and different people are already out here. But if those were cases that we would cite through a federal court, then we'd have to figure out how to get them out to McKinleyville. So that's sort of where the idea of a jail came in. And I've talked about it before, and I think we've talked about it. A number of people have talked about it. It's not so much as wanting to incarcerate people for a long period of time. You know, oftentimes folks find themselves, you know, under arrest or in the criminal justice system, you know, have you know, problems with, you know, drugs and alcohol and different things where maybe they're not getting the services that they need and go into a situation where, you know, jail's overcrowded or they end up in prison. It's just an environment where, you know, rehabilitation is not even a realistic option for individuals, yet that's what the ultimate idea or goal behind the incarceration of an individual was or is supposed to be. So if you identify folks who, you know, are cited for a misdemeanor, you know, whatever the case might be, a drunken public or something, you know, we would make sure that our social service program is there, human services program is there, be able to provide those services in a timely manner for individuals who may need them. You know, it's kind of where we're headed ultimately with that idea. We've posed the question to Yurok and others about, you know, whether or not that's something that, you know, they would be interested in as well, in trying to address those issues here locally. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, if you will, the concept behind the jail.
Okay. Well, thank you for that.
Sure.
Explanation. Yeah. I see it a little clearer now. All right. So I'm talking with Ryan Jackson, chairman of the Hoopa Valley Tribe, and his tribal chairman's report. And we're here at KIDE Hoopa, just about 7 o'clock p.m. There are some, any other issues you would like to bring up? And
sure. I, as you know, the budget has been approved to, we're under a continuing resolution, which is good through December 9th. That's funding at last year's level, I think it's actually 2015 levels. So that's currently in place. The goal is to have a budget approved within the next 2 weeks,